Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app. Willard and Dibs.
Sorry about my dog. Hey, cut it out.
I don't know if we've met your dog yet, Steve.
Sounds like she's a stretch four. Got some size to her in that bark.
More of a backup point guard.
On 95.7 The Game.
Yep. Sometimes Steve Kerr joins us on the River Islands guest line, but not right now. We're going to have an even bigger guest on the River Islands guest line. It's my good friend John Bloom, who's the voice of the Suns. We're also in the midst of the kickoff show in Santa Clara, getting ready for Niners-Lions with absolutely nothing on the line at all. Let's go. The kickoff show presented by Habas Law. You've been wronged. Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit habaslaw.com. Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Hey, you know what? You're saying there's nothing on the line. You're speaking for yourself, all right? I mean, I'm deep into a 27-plus-year relationship here with a diehard Lions fan. So I am going to the game. It's my first ever Levi's Stadium experience tonight, and I'm going to be the only one rocking Niners gear out of the four Blooms heading to the game.
Oh, as you know, I'm aware, but the Lions also have nothing to gain by winning this game tonight. They just have to win next week, so I get
it. It's so weird.
I know. It's so weird. And actually, because you do have so many years under your belt, sports media in Detroit, and because you live with Lions fans, can you explain to the 49er fan base what was the dynamic like for Lions fans to go through the end of the season that unfolded last year?
I mean, I rode that roller coaster with my lovely wife, Jill, and our daughters they root for both, though. You know, when you're a kid or you're a teenager, I guess you can get away with that, and then you just pick whichever team's hot. So, of course, they're going to be in the Honolulu Blue and Silver tonight. But as far as my wife is concerned and her family and our friends from Detroit, I mean, that was a wild ride that I think in the end they all look back very fondly, despite the fact that they came one step away from making their first ever Super Bowl. And we know how the Lions, or how the Niners fans feel about what transpired after the fact, because I'm one of them, and I feel the way you probably feel, and a lot of your listeners probably feel about how they should have won that darn game, and we should be celebrating the sixth Super Bowl championship in our viewing pleasure over the course of our lives. But as I've talked to you before, Will, I have taken on the mentality of a Lions fan, not just because I married one, but also just working there for the 6 years that I did and doing Lions post-game shows. And this is when they were awful, but they had Barry Sanders, who was amazing and still probably one of the best athletes / football players I've ever laid eyes on. However, the futility is unmatched with regards to the Lions. And just you can't argue it. I mean, maybe Cleveland Browns fans feel like they've got a piece in it, but I feel like that argument ends after a while and the Lions end up winning it. Now, because of last year, that has changed, and now because of how they're poised at 13-2 with what's to come and maybe a chance to get to the Super Bowl, now Lions fans are feeling a certain type of way, and I'm guessing there's going to be a fair amount of them tonight at Levi's.
Oh, God, they're everywhere, dude. We're here now. They're freaking everywhere. So, dude, wear as much red as you have because there's a lot of blue in this area right now.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. We actually did go to the Lions-Cardinals game and enjoyed the heck out of that, by the way. And there were a ton of Lions fans in Phoenix for that one. And that made a lot of sense, too. But, you know, this one, I think, I wonder how much of it would have been the case had the Niners still been in the mix.
Yeah, I'm sure that would make a major difference. John, we want to ask you about the Warriors and the Suns and some basketball in a sec, but
do
I know
we
you're
have
not...
to?
We do. We do.
That was
we won that game, so we're talking about it.
Yeah, the battle of 15 and 15 teams on Saturday. The Warriors came out on top, but I want to ask you one more question about Lions fans. I know you are not one, but you close proximity to a bunch of them. I mean, this feels like a team led by Dan Campbell who, even though there is nothing to play for and even though they're a team that has been bit by the injury bug like none other in the NFL, although maybe other than the 49ers. This feels like a game that they're still going to come out and try to beat the Niners by 30 because of what happened last year in January.
Oh, I think without question. And even for the players that weren't on that team that lost in the NFC title game, I think they've taken on the mentality and they're going to be bolstered by the guys who were, and they're still kind of ornery over getting that close and losing that game. So, yeah, I feel like that'll still be there. They're kind of like, you know, are sharks going to stay away from blood in the water if they're full? I'm guessing no. These guys are built a certain way. I think that they're smelling blood in the water tonight, and they're going to go have theirs. That's my expectation.
Can I ask you a Campbell question just because I know, and I know you've been living in Arizona for a while now, but like, I'm sure, this is my guess, Lions fans love the hell out of Dan Campbell for two reasons. He's a culture changer, and he did it, and he's also just, he's an easy cat to sort of like find very engaging, and so I bet it's a total love fest. Is there 5% of Lions fans though who are like, dude, you're crazy and you're gonna mess up at the wrong time again?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put it at 5. It's a great call, though, because inevitably, like, if you're in a conversation with a group of Lions fans, and let's maybe say there's enough of them to have, like, you know, 6 or 7 or more, then there's going to be one, okay? There is going to be one. So maybe it is 5%. I don't know. But there is one. There's going to be one that's like, yeah, but do we need to go for it on 4th and 6 at our own 10? Like, is that something we need to do?
Seriously.
And Dan Campbell is going to do it because that's his mentality. And I think that now it's almost gotten to a point where the entire fan base has just accepted, this is who we are, this is how we play, this is who Dan is, we love him, and you're right on the money with the love affair. I don't know that I've ever seen a coach that's more fit for leading a team in a city that he's leading that team in than Dan Campbell leading the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, it's been a match made in heaven. John, I want to transition. I know you don't want to talk about basketball. I think Warrior fans out here have been so distracted by their recent 2-13 stretch, or 2-13 stretch, that they haven't maybe been able to see what's been going on around the rest of the league. And the Suns have kind of been in a similar boat. I know KD missed some games earlier with an injury, and right now Devin Booker is out. But for the distracted Warrior fan who has been so concerned by their own team struggles, what the hell's been going on with the Suns of late?
Yeah, it's been a mess, to be honest with you, Mark. And you look at both of these rosters coming into the season, and I think I could even convince your partner, Will, to be on my side and say, hey, look, the Suns have a better overall roster, right? I mean, I would you agree with that before the season started, that you would have been?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly at the top level of it, and also in the intuitiveness of it, like the fit of it. I still think the Warriors are trying to figure out their own fit.
Yes, but here's the massive difference, and this is what makes this kind of explanation, I think, easy for your listeners to understand. Far more probably easier than it is for me to explain to the Suns fans that I'm talking to on the regular occasion, and that is Steve Kerr. And that is the hierarchy that the Warriors have established. And I know they've had some change in the front office, obviously, with Bob Myers moving on, but still, you know, there's a culture there. And forget about Riley in the culture in Miami, which they, it's overdone, right? That's, there's a whole thing there that everybody in the NBA is kind of over the fact that we're just being served up culture every time we go see Pat Riley in Miami. But here in the Bay, looking at the combination of the coach and then having Steph Curry be the guy on the floor leading everything along with Draymond, who's still obviously playing a major role. And I know there's people on both sides of the Draymond Green fence now in the Bay, whereas it used to be much more one-sided there. I think there's, you know, probably people feeling both ways on it, but he still, in my opinion, makes a massive difference for this team. All of that means that when you bring people in, like even a Dennis Schroeder in the middle of the season, who's been playing big minutes for Brooklyn and actually scoring a lot, and you bring him to a totally different system, it's going to take time. Obviously, it's not going to work right away, but the idea is if you get a guy of a certain acumen, he's got a mindset and he knows the game and he understands who is in charge here, which everybody does. I just talked about those dudes, then they all fall in line. And when you're talking about the Phoenix Suns, you have Kevin Durant, who just got there in a trade that was, by the way, pretty controversial when it came to the fan base, because you had to trade guys who they considered twins, Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, and they fell in love with these two dudes like they were two of their own family members, right? And so you grew this team together around Chris Paul, Devin Booker. They went to the finals, and everybody felt attached to them. And then you got a new owner who decided to come in, shake it up, bring one of the greatest of all time, and I don't have to tell you how good Kevin Durant is, and bring him to town. But that meant reset, and that meant reset without an established coach and culture, because you got a brand new coach in Frank Vogel. You go through that, you get rid of him because you didn't feel good about getting swept in the first round. You bring in Mike Budenholzer, great feelings about a guy who was raised in Arizona, is coming back and has a pridefulness about him to try to lead the Suns to their first ever championship. But then you get through injuries and all this other stuff, and you can't rely on that established culture and system. And that's what I'm seeing firsthand right now.
John Bloom is the voice of the Suns. He also married a Lions fan. So here we are chatting it out right here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Grandy is in for Dibbs. I want to ask you this, John, because you and I had the opportunity to hang out a little bit recently. And on that drive, you we were talking hoops, and you looked at me and you just went, dude, Steve Kerr is so good. He's just so good. And I want you to expand on that, because this fan base needs to hear from outside of the area what you mean by that.
Yeah, I love that you threw that at me, because I have even more kind of armored or artillery to come back at you with, because we just, you know, when they came to town and Steve Kerr was doing his pregame media, it was just before, or excuse me, just after the Territorial Cup, because, you know, that's what they call when ASU plays University of Arizona in football. Yep. Steve Kerr, a prideful Arizona Wildcat. But of course, I work with all these Sun Devils who, you know, went to ASU. So a couple of them who are in our television production staff came up just to kind of give him the business on it before he took the stage and did his pregame media, and it was so playful, and he handled it in class. Then he got up, and one of the questions that he got peppered with in Phoenix was about coaching Devin Booker on the Olympic team, and how you know, much praise he gave Book in Paris about the role he played on that team, and how he really sacrificed his own normal role to play a team role and help them win a gold medal. And Steve Kerr has an enormous amount of respect in Arizona, obviously getting some hate from Sun Devils fans, but notwithstanding, to hear that meant so much. So maybe to you know, talk about what Steve Kerr means in other markets, I can bring a little bit of a different view to that, not just about his past and spending time in Arizona. It wasn't just in college, too. Remember, he was the general manager of the Phoenix Suns and almost had Steph Curry come to Phoenix as part of a trade. That was all part of Steve Kerr's background here. I can just tell you that what I see him doing here is, in some respects, what I just talked about, the deficiencies with the Suns in not having this culture established. I look at him and I see somebody who absolutely gets respect from everybody across the board, whether it be the foes that he's getting ready to go out and scheme to beat, or the guys that he's leading himself. And that, to me, tells me a lot about him. I felt that he was that kind of a leader when he was in Phoenix, although it didn't seem like he was all the way in. And then we learned quickly, because he was much more meant to be a head coach than a general manager.
John, the biggest story for the Warriors right now, bar none, is Jonathan Kuminga. And as someone who on the other side watched him put up 34 points on Saturday and lead the Warriors to a win, I'm curious what you think about him, because the conversation here in Warriorland is he good enough to be a legit number two scoring option alongside Stephen Curry, or should the Warriors look to maybe include him in a trade that brings someone else in? I know we're coming off of the high of Saturday night where he was awesome, but what do you think? How do you view Jonathan Kuminga and what he might be able to do at his best alongside Steph Curry?
First of all, I love his name. We spell it the same way. I've never gone by Jonathan, but he does, and so I appreciate that. Second of all, if I was regarded as a finished product at his age, which is 22, if I'm not mistaken, there is no way in heck I would have ever been hired to do any of the jobs that I've gotten to do over the course of my career. 22 is just too early to completely judge a dude. Now, I know he's had a fair amount of reps at the NBA level. They also had him going and playing in Santa Cruz a little bit at the beginning of his career, more so, right? But I think it's just such a difficult task as a general manager to gauge what the return on a guy like that could be. Because, again, at 22, there still could be so much growth ahead of him. I'm not talking about inches. I think he's probably set at 6'7 or 6'8, wherever he's at. But I'm talking about as far as his basketball acumen, his IQ, and what kind of a teammate he's going to be. He's learning from some of the greatest to ever play. So all those things to me mean maybe give you a little bit more runway with a guy like that than with some other folks that might be the same age with the same amount of games played and experience, if that makes any sense.
John Bloom with us, voice of the Suns. We're also talking Lions, Niners. He's on his way to the game tonight. John, give me your view, because you've seen these teams all up close now. Handicap the Western Conference here. And where do the Suns and Warriors both fit in your mind?
Well, here's the one thing I'm curious about. Will, I haven't seen Memphis yet, and that was a team that before the season started, I was very curious to find out how they would bounce back now with a kind of reloaded roster with all the injured guys coming back. Now, they all haven't stayed uninjured. There's been a variety of them, but I do think they are performing kind of what I expected. They're better than people expected. They're going to be a problem, I think, to deal with for some of the teams. So that's maybe a team people didn't consider before. Then what's happening with the Minnesota Timberwolves? There was a lot of expectations in Minneapolis after their run to the Western Conference Finals. They've taken a step back. The Suns have to be better than 500. They just have to, with the talent that they have, with the coaches that are trying to reestablish a system. So my expectation is there's a rally there left in the squad that I work for. And then go to the top, Oklahoma City. Is anybody going to catch them? I don't think so. I think they end up with the best record in the NBA, because even if they do confront some injuries, I think they've got enough depth in the system that they've set up. They bring guys in and out anyway. It's a fascinating growth there. And also a study, because, again, they've got a ton of draft picks. What are the Oklahoma City Thunder going to do with all of that draft capital? And are they able to bring in another star to a place that nobody really thinks about stars going to play? And it's not going to be most likely through free agency. So if it is, it's going to use that capital, and then who knows how good they could be, because I already think they're spectacular. I think there's the Warriors, for me, are a team that if they're in at the end and they have the health, then watch out, because, again, Steph Curry is still making ridiculous around the world, shoot it with one arm without even looking at the basket shot, without even trying, making me try to describe that stuff. Are you kidding me? That's impossible. I just feel like they are a force to be reckoned with if they've got that.
Can you reenact that call? What did you do the other night when Steph did that at the end?
I don't. I think it was gibberish, Will. I don't even know how Tim Roy would do. It would have been better if I was in Tim Roy's position, because I could have gotten legitimately fired up about seeing something
about
that I would get legit, instead of, are you kidding me, is really what the sentiment was.
Hey, really quick, John, you might be able to have some insight for Warrior fans. One of the names that has been thrown around as a potential trade target for the Warriors is Cam Johnson, who's on the Nets. You brought him up earlier as part
Love
of the squad.
That
went to the finals. What can you tell Warrior fans about Cam Johnson, and if a trade were to go down, what the Warriors would be getting?
I'm going to tell you right now, if a trade goes down, you're going to have a whole lot of people from the desert just hating you even more than they already hate you, okay? Because that guy is amazing. We absolutely adore Cam Johnson. Actually have some layers to it, too, because his little brother was going to high school with my kids, and so we had a lot of good conversations just, you know, throughout the time that he spent. And it was four seasons, if I'm not mistaken, and there was a thought that this was, you know, the foundation of the future of Phoenix Suns basketball. Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Devin Booker. And those two guys, obviously part of that deal to bring Kevin Durant. But if the Brooklyn Nets are going to move on from him, I think it's a mistake for the Brooklyn Nets, to be honest with you. They've already moved on from Mikal. So, you know, maybe they decided that they didn't want either of the twins. But he's not only a phenomenal shooter, he is a surprisingly explosive athlete. I mean, he'll dunk on a guy and it'll come out of nowhere, because normally he is one of those dudes that loves to stay on the perimeter because he's such a good knockdown three-point shooter. And you guys have had enough of those. I don't want him to go to the Warriors.
And here we're asking for more. We're always wanting more. But all right, John, I'll let you get on your way down here. I can't wait to see you. More importantly, when Brock Purdy throws his first touchdown pass tonight, how will you handle it? Will you stay quiet? Will you respectfully cheer? Or will you turn and point at your daughters and say, in your face?
You got it. It's the last one, except for my youngest will give me the high 10 because she's got Brock on her fantasy squad in the Super Bowl right now.
Let's go. I got
my 15-year-old with me. Even though she's wearing Honolulu blue and silver, she'll be rocking with Brock tonight.
Well, I tell you what, I hope it goes the same way it did on Saturday. I love your family, but they were all wearing purple, and I was sitting right next to them, and they were so happy, and then suddenly they weren't happy anymore.
191, it looked great. They must have been dancing.
Yeah. All right, buddy, travel safe. We'll see you in a bit.
Man, take it easy. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. There he goes. John Bloom, the voice of the Suns, spent years in Detroit sports media and joining us right here on Willard and Dibbs.